member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the VC. It is Saturday, the 12th of January, Anno Domini 2013, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. There's not even dues.
You got your rent. Oh, there it goes.
Yeah.
This thing likes to, you know, you adjust it. And then it's either set for Rob's height, which is up in the sky, or way down low, some midget. And I try to get it in the middle.
Don't talk about Ray like that.
You're going to get in trouble, dude. That was Steve Ray. That's R-E-A.
All right, I'm just...
playing with your new toy. You got to tell the folks. Hold it up. Show them. That's a little more important than the news right now.
You think so?
It is. This is news.
This is news. I have a Chromebook. I've had it for a little while. It's the first time I brought it here. And I love it. It's the Samsung, the $250 one. And it's magnificent. It really, truly is magnificent. I'm very, very impressed by it. What can I say? It's a Chromebook.
Tell us more.
You turn it on. From a cold boot, 8 seconds later, you're in your browser. You can do all the things you would normally do online, all the Google Docs and everything else. It is Google-centric. And I'm opening this one to the public. We'll start the public hangout and see who joins in. I'm going to have to turn off the sound, however, because that will be confusing to everyone. It's there are specs, but the specs are completely unimportant.
It's no longer about speeds. It's no longer about speeds and feeds. It's what can I do?
Right, exactly. It's got a dual core processor. It's got 2 gig of RAM. It's got 16 gig on the hard drive, the SSD card. But who cares? What's really important is the fact that when I turn it on, I am immediately connected to Google. And so I can do docs. So I can do word processing and spreadsheets and everything else that's there. I can surf the web. I can do all of that stuff. All of the... additional things that are available are there as well.
The things you can add in. SD card. How big of an SD card?
16 gig.
But you can go bigger?
Why?
Well, no, I'm just asking. Right.
No, I get that. If you're going to, for example, work offline, which you can do,
right.
I can go into Google Docs, for example, and say I want to work on this and this and this and this offline. They'll be downloaded to my machine. And then when I'm done, when I finally get back to another wireless, it'll automatically be uploaded again. And that's great, but it doesn't matter.
What I was thinking is if, say I had a bunch of photos, you know, and I pulled them over and I got them on one SD card.
They're on an SD card. Oh, yeah, I see. As opposed, you can put it on, you can put your own SD card in here too, by the way. There's a slot.
So if you wanted to
add your own 32 or 60. This is an SSD card. This is the thing that replaces the hard drive.
Right. But no, I'm saying an SD card. Be able to slide one of those in. Yep. Say I want to do some touching up of photos or, you know, I've got a bunch of photos and I want to put titles on them. You know, again, it's a nice, thin, small unit.
Right.
To be able to pop that in and just work with it.
Well, but again, you do all of that stuff online.
Right.
So you'd have to upload them to Picasa or whatever. Somebody. So again, that doesn't have anything to do with your own hard drive.
Okay.
And so it's $250, ridiculously light. It's got a USB 2, a USB 3, an SD slot, a slot for a SIM card for Phones. The battery lasts 8 hours. I'm very impressed by it. And it's ridiculously light. It's insanely light. Full-size keyboard. Very, very cool. Very, very nice product. Anyway, let's get to the news. And then we'll get to the phones. So we'll do it all today. And so far, I'm still the only one in the Hangout. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has urged that computer users immediately disable Java. Yes, the Department of Homeland Security urges computer users to immediately disable Java in light of a security expert's warning of a serious exploit. Apple has already remotely disabled any version prior to 1.7.0_10-B18 via its remote X-Protect security mechanism in OS X. The U.S. Computer Security Readiness Team referenced on January 10th the Software Engineering Institute vulnerability note, you don't care what the number is, which says Java 7 Update 10 and earlier contain an unspecified vulnerability that can allow a remote unauthenticated attacker to execute arbitrary code in a vulnerable system. So pretty much anybody can go into your machine and do anything they want. There's no known workaround to the latest version of Java, and the agency noted that this vulnerability is being attacked in the wild and is reported to be incorporated into exploit kits. Exploit code for this vulnerability is also publicly available. Apple has already responded by disabling the Java plugin on Macs. You're welcome. That actually have it installed. A lot of Macs don't bother installing Java. OS X now has a mechanism called the xprotect.plist that can remotely update, can be remotely updated by Apple, which I would think is kind of a security problem in and of itself, but that's a different story. If you're curious about whether Java is even installed on your computer, you can open a terminal window and type in the following: Java space, the minus key version. Java space dash version. If it's not installed, the OS will invite you to do so. At least the Mac OS will invite you to do so. But considering the latest version of Java is vulnerable, you should probably pass on that offer. The exploit was discovered by a French researcher calling him or herself Caffeine. Because the Java plugin is disabled by Apple for browsers, applets will be prevented from executing within a browser. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is: have you disabled Java? And the choices are yes, no, I love me some Java, nope, too lazy, I have never had Java on my computer, and iced tea for the win, baby. And so far, I haven't even looked. How do you like that? Sorry, I've been too busy being overly drugged. So far, we got 37 votes. And yes is actually ahead by one. Interesting. When you're done with that, I know you'll have more to say. So check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Where you can enter your opinion. The question there is, why do you run Java anyway? And, of course, that's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You can join us on the IRC chat. You can join us live on the air. You can join us through the streaming media service. I'm running a Google Hangout, which I can't talk on. I've had to kill the sound because I'm on the air. Yeah,
mute them. That'd be a little too confusing.
Yeah. What did I miss? That's pretty much every. Oh, Ustream. Yeah. I missed Ustream. So we're doing it. We're trying to do it. We're doing everything really, but going out and dragging you into the studio to be here with us. Give us a call, just like James did from Rochester, New York. Hiya, James. What's up?
How you doing? Yeah, in the power settings, there's an area they ask you a question. When you close the lid, what is the best to do? Sleep, nothing, hibernate, or shut down on Windows 7?
Well,
what do you prefer?
That's just it. It's a personal preference. I prefer to shut down. And the reason I prefer to shut down is because I've got, if I'm going to set the thing aside, I want the maximum battery life for when it's actually running.
No, I use the power cord, but I only close the lid for like a couple minutes sometimes.
Well, like I said, it's completely personal preference.
What's the difference between the sleep and the hibernate?
The difference between sleep and hibernate, I'm going to get this backwards. I know I am. Sleep actually puts everything, to sleep. But when you start it up, it jumps right back up again. So it still uses a certain amount of battery. Hibernate creates a special little space on the hard drive and puts all of the contents of memory into that space. And when you open the thing up again, it loads that back into memory and starts you up where you left off. So it takes a little longer when you do hibernate, but you do have, you're using no battery, whereas sleep uses some battery.
So if you got it plugged in, you can just do it with nothing and it just goes back to where it was.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. One other question. On the Windows with the Internet Explorer, sometimes I get it stops. It says a problem caused the program to stop working correctly. Windows will close the program and notify you if a solution is available. What's that from?
Any one of 100,000 things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, pick one.
Yeah, it could be any one of 1,000 things. Most of them having nothing to do with your computer.
Oh, that just on its own, it does that.
Yeah. Well, that's coming from the often at least coming from the website. Mm-hmm. That you're on, and you have no control over that.
And it rarely works anyway.
Yeah, right. Because the rest of the computer works fine. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, we see that a lot, I'm afraid, and more as time goes on. It can be caused, as I said, from 100 million different things, and because of that, it's very difficult, unless you're there at the moment, to tell what the problem actually is. It could indeed be an actual problem. That's a possibility, but it may not be. It may not be. So, I don't know what to say about that one. All right, our next caller is Pat from Lindenville. Lindenville, New York. I don't even know where that is. Pat, where's Lindenville?
North of Medina.
Ah, then I do know where it is. What can we do to make
I've called a few times.
Yep.
I used to work at Niagara County Hospital. You guys helped us win that MRI when I worked there.
Oh, yeah. What can we do for you?
Well, my daughter's having a problem with her Mac. She's got a MacBook Pro, OS X. It's brand new. We just bought it this summer. 2.6 gigahertz, 8 gig of RAM. And she's trying to do her college homework on Photoshop. She works in graphic design. There's a couple of features that they were working when she first started manipulating these photos, and then they stopped partway through. And we don't know if maybe she turned something off. It's a spot healing brush tool and a clone stamp tool that she needs to use to work with these photos, and they just stopped working.
Now, the whole photo stopped, or those two tools disappeared?
Those two tools are still on the screen, but they don't work. When you click on them, nothing happens.
Okay, but all the other tools still work.
Right.
Oftentimes, that means the layer you're on doesn't have anything that can be edited with that tool, or the color space you're in, whether it's RGB or CMYK or HSN, or no, HSL, can't work with whatever that tool that you're trying to select is. So you may have to be in a specific color space like RGB and on a layer that has dots on it. So if you're on a text layer, you probably can't do a spot healing brush because that function only works with dots or photos.
Right. Well, it is too. She put one photo over top of another, and she's trying to use the spot healing brush to like match the colors because one's like a light gray and a dark gray. It just doesn't do anything. It does. Sometimes it comes up. Sometimes it comes up when you click with the mouse to drag it across. It'll drag across, and then when it disappears, nothing has changed behind it.
It may be in
a different layer.
Well, yeah, you may be on the wrong layer that you're trying to edit, or it may be in a preview mode where it's showing you a preview of what it's going to do without actually doing it yet. that may be something as also. I'm not that familiar with Photoshop, but I'm digging around their website on how the healing brush works. So I can post a link to that. It usually means that the layer you're on can't do whatever that tool is supposed to do. You might want to try making a brand new document with a picture and see if it works on that. It may be something in that specific document you're trying to do.
Okay. But she opened a second one and she started working with a second one and she ran into the same problem. It worked in the beginning and then it stopped working.
All right. Listen, I'm afraid we gotta go. Okay. Got to take a break. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And people on the IRC chat are asking why we didn't do Hangouts on air, possibly simply because I'm an idiot. And the only person in here is Joe, so I'm going to end this this Hangout and start another one. Sorry, Joe. And start another one actually on air if I can. But in the meantime, we'll go to the phone, and our next caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
I run Windows 7, and based on your expert advice, I set up a user account. But when I go on my user account, I can't access certain programs, like my email or my Office programs, the Excel and the Word. Now, I've been trying to find a way to allow the user access to those programs, and I can't find out how to do it, so I'm calling for a little advice.
Well, mail. Which mail program are you using?
The Live Mail that came with Windows 7.
Usually when you're installing a third-party program, it will ask you if you want to install it for this user or all users. And you need to say all users. Some programs will only run as administrator, but I wouldn't have thought Mail would do that.
No, that shouldn't. Quite often you can right-click on a particular program and say run it as administrator.
Right. But a standard user should be able to run Mail.
Yeah, but it's still Windows is goofy. I mean, try right-clicking on it and say run as administrator.
Oh, you mean, logged on as a user?
Yeah, right. Well, you're logged on there.
It won't even show up. It doesn't show up when I'm in the user account and I go to the list of the programs. It's not even listed on the programs.
Mm-hmm.
Are you running Hotmail through the web browser?
Not Hotmail. It's the Windows Live Mail.
Yeah, Live Mail.
Yeah. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta love it.
And are you running that through the browser?
Yeah, right.
Well, then you won't see it in the list of programs. You have to. It's got to be a bookmark.
Open your web browser and bookmark Live. What is it? Live.microsoft.com, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So Open my web browser and.
Yeah, so it's not a program, it's a website. So you have to open your website, go to your mail, and then save that as a bookmark.
Now, bookmarks, that's with Macintosh, isn't it?
Well, that's what browser you're using. Some browsers call them bookmarks. Some browsers call them favorites.
I'm using the Internet Explorer.
Yeah, that calls it favorites.
Yeah,
favorites.
Yeah, Chrome and Firefox both call them bookmarks.
Right.
Actually, every other browser calls them bookmarks.
Yeah, Firefox does too.
Yeah, so does Safari and Chrome. It's only IE that calls them favorites.
They gotta be different. Damn.
And the same thing with my, the Windows and the Excel and the Word that came with the Windows 7 software when I bought the computer.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably just a demo because Office does not come with Windows. You have to buy that separately.
Yeah, it's what they call the starter program, the basic program.
And if you don't, if you really don't need that, want to pay for that, we always suggest going to OpenOffice. OpenOffice is free, and oh, by the way, it does a lot more than Microsoft Office and saves you tons of money because it's all free.
Yeah.
Versus paying $300-$400.
But programs have to be installed with permission for other users. Some programs have to be done as administrator. So, Nick, Microsoft Office, when it's already installed, how do you add a user to give permission to run that program? Or should Office be accessible to all users?
It should not be accessible. Yeah,
when Office was installed.
It was pre-installed at the factory.
Then it should be available to all users. All features should be available to all users, and you should just be able to log on as your user and get to whatever you need. If you're having trouble doing that, then there's something far more wrong with your computer than just Hotmail, and you needed to get it checked out by somebody.
Or Dan Satango. First Dan Satango.
Yeah, I do that, and there's been no problem.
Okay.
No,
you can access all those programs when you're logged in as the administrator.
Yeah, when I'm on as the administrator, I can access anything. It's just when I go to log on as a user, I can access the Internet Explorer, but I can't access my Live Mail or my Office, Excel, the spreadsheet and the Word Basic starter accounts.
That's nuts. That was installed wrong then.
Okay.
That's the problem there, and I the only wow.
Yeah, we can't do anything about that. You'd have to have it checked out.
Yeah, you've got to have whoever installed it.
I bought the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
You could try uninstalling it and reinstalling it, and make sure you say all users during the install.
Okay.
Got the disk.
Yeah, that's what's good if you have the disk. Again, if it's a demo, double check.
Well, that's the other thing. How long have you had this machine?
6 months.
And are you sure that you got a license or you got a demo license?
I got the license, I would assume, when I bought it.
You can't assume that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it may just be a demo that came with the computer.
Which is typical.
But even if it's a demo, it still should be accessible to all users.
Yes.
It should, yeah.
You mean the demo, the program for...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, well, isn't Live Mail part of Windows 7?
Well,
not really. It's a Microsoft service that you can use on any computer with any browser.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'll check back with the company that I bought it from then. Is that the best thing to do?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
Yep. Yeah, that's weird.
I can see manufacturers assuming that
You're
going to log on as admin because regular users don't know to.
You know what happened? I'll bet when he got the machine, it didn't log him in as anybody. And then he set up an admin and then set up a regular user.
That could be.
And the machine.
So it's the default user, and then he made a standard user.
Right.
Weird.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joanne. From Greece. Welcome, Joanne. What's your question?
Hi. It's about Excel. I use it a lot for spreadsheets and many different things.
Yep.
And I save it, and it saves it in the cloud. Well, then I get to a point where I've just got a spreadsheet open now, and the toolbar at the top will not let me do any of the operations. Way up at the top, it says it's a compatible mode. I don't know if that's...
That generally means you've opened an old document in an old version of Excel.
Okay.
And it's running in compatibility mode.
Right. Either a new version, probably a new version of Excel, but
an old document.
Right,
yeah.
An old spreadsheet.
Okay.
So what you have to do at that point, you should be able to, at the very least, save it.
It won't let me do that now.
Right. Save it under a different name.
But when I click on File, it doesn't even open under File.
When you've got it open, you can't go up to the top and select File, Save As?
No. Mm-mm.
What happens when you try to click on the File menu?
Nothing.
No error message? No beep?
Nope.
Can you open other documents in, say, other spreadsheets? And
eventually, it'll end up doing the same thing. But maybe if I save it before I do any work with it, or...
Oh, yeah, once you... Yeah, you... Mm-hmm. You're in... Oh, dear.
So what happens is you've opened a document that you can't do anything with, and what you want to do is close out. Start Excel.
Okay.
And don't open anything.
Okay.
But go to File and click Options.
Okay. File.
Under Options, click. Don't do it now. Write it down now, because we got to move on. Under Options, click Save. And when it's and then next to it, it'll say Save Files in This Format.
Okay.
And the one you want probably is just going to say Excel Workbook.
Okay.
You can't. What's happening is you've opened an old spreadsheet.
Uh-huh.
And Excel, the new version of Excel, will not save it as that.
Okay.
So you want to be able to do a save as.
Uh-huh.
And so by doing that, by doing this, now you should be able to open something and be able to work on it and save it. But now it will save it under a slightly different format. So you might want to give it a slightly different name so you don't confuse the two again.
Okay. I will try that.
Okie doke.
Thank
and
you.
Steve is putting up a thing.
Yeah, we put a link up about Excel and compatibility mode and what happens. Basically, what happens is that every now and then, companies will change their file format. And Microsoft did it in 2003, or was it 2007, one of those. So if you have the new 2010 or 2013 Office, when it opens one of those old files, it goes into a compatibility mode to work with the old format. And this is basically a good thing because people don't like to upgrade their software, and so a lot of people are running old versions, and so the new version still needs to be open that old file. But a lot of times it won't save in that old format, and so that's why you're not being able to do what you want to do with it. So saving it into the new format will then let you edit it right.
Right. Before we go back to the phones, I do want to say the IRC chat. The Google Hangout is working. If you are in Google Plus, you can circle me, Nick Francesco, and that will let you join the Hangout. If you just want to watch the Hangout, which is, I think both are kind of pointless at this point because we're on the air and this would just give you some cool thing to do, you can view it on my YouTube channel, which is also Nick Francesco. So
that's why I can't find you as a Hangout?
You should be able to find me as a Hangout as well.
How do I close this stupid? I've got your last picture open. I'm trying to close that picture and get back to my list.
There you go.
There we are. Okay.
There you go.
All right. So here's your list of stuff. I don't.
Yeah, but it's not going to be my list of things. You go back to there and check Hangouts.
This is the start of Hangout.
I don't know.
So I went on your.
Let's get back to the phones. Our next caller is Vic from Irondequoit. Welcome, Vic. What's your question?
I have Java on my Windows 7 desktop, but I really don't know what it does. And if I uninstall it, what will I lose? And should it be like uninstalled forever? And
Java, well, it uninstall until there's an update. Here's what Java does. Java is a program that lets you have all kinds of cutesy effects on websites and also has some actual utility for video and audio. So, for example, there are sites, and I honestly don't know if we're one of them, sites where if you go to, for example, the Jazz 90.1 website and click on the Listen Live link, that might come up as a Java program.
A lot of the remote control software, like go to my PC and log me in, are Java
Adobe
programs.
Adobe Connect, right. Those are Java programs. And so you would lose those. When you go to if you uninstall Java or just shut down Java and run your web browser, you'll see it doesn't have a lot of effect generally on your laptop or desktop. Where it does have an effect is on the web.
And if you try to go to a website that needs Java, it will tell you that you need to install Java.
Well, I'm assuming the people at Java are working to correct this, right?
Right.
Okay, but I'll disable it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. What we're seeing a lot of is both with Java and Flash is they are the most recent vectors for malware, and it feels like the bad guys have a whole list of unknown exploits. And as soon as Adobe patches Flash and Oracle patches Java, there's another exploit that comes out. Apple has done an interesting thing with their Java. They switched over to Oracle Java instead of their own version. But Java on the Mac disables itself if you don't use it for a while. And then the next time a Java app wants to run, a little warning message pops up and warns you that this website wants to run Java and lets you decide if you want to or not. And then when you start using it for a while, and then when you don't use it for a while, it turns itself off again.
Yeah. I don't know. I have disabled Java in Chrome browser, and I don't miss it. You know, when I go to the Internet Movie Database, stuff doesn't play on the side.
Yeah.
Tell us how you really feel.
It's actually kind of nice because a lot of this, you know, you go to a website and all of a sudden it's a drive-by video playing in the sidebar.
Pain in the butt.
Well, they don't play when you're not using Java. I like that.
And I was going to say, and the downside of that not playing?
Well, exactly. Yeah,
I like
exactly.
that.
One of the things that confuses a lot of people is that Java and JavaScript are two completely different things in no way related to each other.
Right.
JavaScript is used on almost every website, and you pretty much need to have it enabled to do anything interesting on the web. Some hardcore programmers will make their website work with no scripting, and you can actually get add-ons to your browser to prevent scripts from running, because that's where a lot of the malicious software comes from these days, is these JavaScripts that run, usually without your knowing it, as soon as the website loads.
All right, we're going to take another break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. Don't forget, you can join us live on radio, live on the web stream. We're live on YouTube, I think. Somebody let me know. Of course, YouTube is blocked here, so I don't know if it's actually working. I can't go look. But theoretically, it is. We'll be back with more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. We're still struggling with getting this thing to work. It may be that...
It worked last week.
It worked last week. Just
what
fine.
Did we do last week?
Oh, I know what I did.
You guys were on good drugs.
I know what I did. Okay, I got it. But while I'm playing around with this, we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I have a couple favors to ask before I get to my question. First, Nick, I called about 7 or 8 months ago and asked about AskNick.com, and you said soon.
And I completely believed that.
And you still do.
But he is also on good meds. You should see him when we got to sort of sedate him and all that. You see a very calm Nick when he's in here in the studio. We've actually got him Velcroed down to the chair so he sits upright. And he can't tip over. You know, he's like a weeble. Won't wobble, but won't fall down.
That is true.
So we just get him on good drugs. And like anything else, it just takes time.
Yeah, well, I can't normally. It's tough for me to get your show on Saturday. So I need some way to get your expertise.
Right.
Podcast.
It's been a struggle for me getting Ask Nick back up and running. I will not bore anyone with the entire story, but my thought was that everything was going to be resolved very shortly. It was not, and we're still struggling to resolve everything.
Do we still think we are going to?
I want it back up. I definitely want it back up.
Okay, well, just give you another boost. Let's go. Let's get out there and work on it.
Yes, sir.
Now another favor. I do a lot of reading of newspapers on the internet.
Right.
And sometimes, way too often, they use very, very light gray text on a white background. Difficult to read. Now, I know I can go into my settings and change it so everything is black on white, but it obviously changes the page. And then you go back into settings and you change it back again. I would like to challenge you guys to write an apt for Mozilla that I could put in there on my desktop, right there on the browser, where I could just click it, change it to a dark font so I can read it and click it back and not have to dig through the options to change it.
What web browser do you use?
To change it back again.
What web browser do you use?
I'm using Mozilla right now, mostly, and Chrome, but I know you probably can't do much for Chrome.
No, there are programs, add-ons, extensions.
Right, they call them add-ons, yes.
For both add-ons for Firefox and extensions for Chrome that let you set what's called the CSS.
Right, but that just makes some sites look absolutely horrible.
Well, that's, you got to deal with that. I mean, you have to set the way it looks.
What I'm thinking is if I had a button that I could push to, okay, change it so I can actually read it, and then when I'm done reading it, just push the button and go back again instead of having to dig through the stuff to get to it.
No, I get what you're saying. I don't know of any program that does that.
I found an extension for Firefox called No Squint that basically adds a button that brings up a sheet to let you change the colors and change the zoom.
And I can look at that.
So that would be quick, and then you can undo it when you're onto the next page.
Now for my question, and I'm sure you guys are going to be, it's just because I don't know what to call it, I can't find it. I'm running Windows 7 Ultimate with a classic shell. When I go to save a file, any file at all, you get the pop-up window, and on the right-hand pane, you've got different places you can go. The left-hand pane generally has some suggestions of places to save it, mostly visited, things like that.
Right.
I have a different physical hard drive for my data. So if I ever have to reinstall, I don't lose my data. How do I change those options in the left-hand column? Because I don't go to any of those sites. I don't use favorites. I don't use, anything that they have there. I want to be able to direct it to my
Can't you just drag the folder icon into that side panel?
No, it's hidden. You can. Two things. If you're talking about the bookmarks, the favorites, all that stuff, is that what you're talking about?
I don't know. Basically, if you go to save a file up, you get a window of where to save it.
Save a file from where?
Well, I mean, you can save a photo, you can save a... And I realize if I'm doing a Word document, that's an Office function and not a Windows function. But if you go to download something, if you go to download a program, it gives you the option where to save it. It wants to put it in its
the folder list
folder,
on the left side of
a
window.
That folder. I don't put things on my C drive.
All right,
drive
stop. Okay, stop. Here's the deal. In Office, you can set the default save folder. It is normally documents, but you can change that.
Right, I understand that, but okay.
You can also change it in Firefox and in Chrome and in anything else.
Right, I understand. I can save the default, but
it's that list of common folders that shows up on the left.
Where to save it, because I will put things in different places. If you just download something and ask where to save it, a window will pop up, and there's a pane on the left side with favorites and downloads, it's little icons where...
Yeah, as far as I remember, you just don't use any of them. You just drag the folder you want into that sidebar on your desktop, as far as I remember doing it.
Can you get rid of the ones that are there?
That I don't know about.
And do you know what that's called so I can look at it? A lot of times you can't find something because you don't know what it's called.
Yeah, yes. That is,
the navigation.
They're Microsoft,
pane.
So everything is called favorites. But it's the Windows Explorer favorites. It's the list of favorites in the navigation pane.
You can
remove the ones that are there because you've got like desktop and downloads and recent places and all that stuff. Now I get where you are. You simply right click on one, and one of the choices will be to remove.
But you have to do it on the desktop. You can't do it from inside a program.
Right.
You have to do that from the desktop. To add one is also easy. What you do is when you're in the folder you want to add, right-click on the word favorites. And at the bottom of the drop-down menu, it says add current location to favorites.
Or you can just drag it from the right-hand file list into the left-hand navigation pane.
Right.
I never thought of doing it from the desktop. I hadn't thought of that.
You can also drag it as a folder.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. I expect to see Ask Nick up within the next month.
That would be lovely, wouldn't it?
It would be. Thank you all very right. much.
Thanks.
And the same functions available on the Mac, too, in that sidebar. You can drag things into and out of the sidebar so that you can put your own common folders there.
Right.
It's easy to drag something into the sidebar. You just drag it and it goes there. They've actually made it a little harder to drag things out of the sidebar. You actually have to hold down the command key to remove it from the sidebar. I wish it was the other way around. It's too easy to put stuff in there. I wish it was harder to put it in because I find, especially novice users, will have all sorts of stuff in there that they accidentally dragged and then they can't find the folder that they really wanted anymore.
Right. Before we get back to the phones, let me remind people the YouTube thing is back up. I think somebody should let me know that one way or the other.
Well, I'm trying to join your Hangout, and it keeps saying waiting for others to join. And it never sees you, and you never see me.
I think you just started your own Hangout, is what you just did.
Well, I'm on your status that you're hanging out, and I clicked on your join Hangout.
Well, I don't know.
That's weird.
Maybe
well,
you
says,
can't.
It says it's limited. But I'm in your circles and you're in mine, so we should be able to.
Yeah, it's limited to my circles, but theoretically, everybody should be able to join this Hangout. I haven't changed anything, unless I've done something extremely stupid. And that's certainly a possibility. If this is me. It does say there's only one viewer and it's me. So far, this is very, very lonely Hangout. But we're gonna think about that in a minute. We're back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Joey's
I have a Windows 7 laptop. It's an HP Pavilion. I've had it for a year and a half. I keep it up to date both in the firmware and the Windows 7 updates. And I have this aggravating problem where it has a little trackpad on it. And I go into the control panel to the mouse section, and I increase the pointer speed so that one swipe brings me from side to side on the screen. It works fine. I saved it. I applied it, everything. And the next time I boot the laptop up, it's back to the default slow setting. And I do have administration privileges on my laptop, and I'm really confused.
So it's one of those that should be working but isn't, and that's always the worst kind of problems.
I agree. You know, I tried variations. I've tried just about everything I could think of, but it is Windows 7. Everything is up to date. I do have administration privileges. I just moved the slider over to increase the speed of the pointer. I apply it, I save it, it goes away, it works fine during the session. Next time I boot up the laptop, it's back to the slower default speed. And I haven't Googled the problem yet, but
probably a registry entry that isn't getting saved.
Yeah, So, and this is an HP Pavilion?
Yes.
And you can change it every time. That's never a problem.
Correct. It works every time. Only when I reboot, then it's back to, I'll say, the factory default setting.
Are you, oh, man. There should be a program in your system called Setpoint.
Okay.
Look and see which version you're running. If it's point, it's if it's 4.7, that is definitely your problem.
Okay, I will do that.
In addition to the Windows updates, you have to find any HP updates.
Right, and the reason is, Setpoint 4.7 had that exact problem. And Setpoint is actually the program that runs many companies' trackpads, Dell, Acer, HP, several others. And so if you're running 4.7, there should be an HP, little HP program to upgrade some of their stuff.
Sorry, I was just going to say, and that I have done also. I've done the firmware updates through HP religiously.
Now, this is not firmware. I'm sorry, this is not firmware. This is just a software program.
Okay.
So make sure, you may have to directly download the new version of Setpoint. You can also backload it to 4.6, which still works. But you don't want to be using 4.7. Check to see if that's the problem.
Okay, thank you. That's something I didn't do and have not looked for. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Weird little
problems. All right, we've got Joe. Joe is in on the podcast. You're in my circles, so you should be able to get there.
And I hit join Hangout, and looks like I join a Hangout, but then it just sits there waiting for others to join.
But it doesn't ask me. It says 6 viewers. Oh, I can see how many people are actually viewing me talking
from Ustream,
to empty
probably.
Air. This is kind of cool. Yeah, from YouTube. Oh, that's kind of fun. And it's Joe is there. Joe, if you'd like to talk to the other 5 people, other 4 people really, feel free to do so. I can't talk back because I've muted sound because I'm actually on the air.
We're doing a radio show.
We are doing a radio show, but we're having some fun here. This is kind of interesting. It's just one more. And there he is. He apparently cleared his throat. It's interesting because it gives us one more way to communicate with people. Only I don't know why Steve can't get in. It's very weird.
It looks like it's creating a new Hangout.
Yeah. All right.
At least Steve's not going boing boing.
Well, exactly, which he often does on Sunday nights. We're going to take a slightly longer break. But we will be back for a whole nother hour of this nonsense. So please remember to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You can join us on YouTube. You can join us on IRC chat. You can join us on Ustream. You can join us on the live stream from jazz901.org. You can join us live here on the radio by giving us a call. You can join us tomorrow night in Second Life. In the meantime, we'll just take a quick break while we try to figure out what the heck is going on. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enrich.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we seem to now have the IRC, the IRC chat is, of course, working. But the YouTube stream is working. A couple of people are watching us on YouTube, apparently. Actually, 9 people are watching us on YouTube.
All right. I apologize. I had a brain fart. We got somebody transferred. I think it was John.
Oh, you don't know who this is.
Well, we had so many folks backed up that...
No, I get it. We'll ask him when he or she gets here. Hi, who's this?
Hi, you got John German out of Elmira Heights, New York.
Out of where?
Elmira Heights, New York. Do you know where Courtney is?
Oh, yeah, Elmira Heights. Yeah, I do know Elmira Heights. Okay, go ahead. What can we do for you?
Okay, what is the date that you have for the passing of Commodore? And I also need to know, why would some computers have a cat besides a mouse? And I don't understand that.
Well, it depends on what you mean by a cat. There are a couple of programs. There was one called the,
QCAT.
QCAT, yeah, it was a little
Which was a little scanner, which was very, very cute. And it was a little scanner that you could use to scan text into a computer. And because computers already had mice, they shaped it like a cat, which was very cute.
I wondered because this one friend of mine, well, he's deceased now, but he sold the computers. And this one guy bought a computer. He says, I know what to do with a mouse, but what do I do with a cat? And he said, I had no idea.
And that was it. That I'm sure was it. As far as the Commodore 64, if that's what you're talking about, it was introduced back in January of 1982.
Yep.
Commodore International itself closed in 1994.
Yeah.
But it's come back. CommodoreUSA.net.
Yes.
They are remaking the Commodore computer in a modern configuration.
Oh, really? You mean you can still get a Commodore now?
You can get it again.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
They're doing
because
the...
I know they... And what else... what do they call them? Joysticks. What are they used for? Why would we want those?
Those are for gamers, mostly. When you're doing high-end gaming, you can't really use the keypad or the... arrows anymore. You need a smoother, better control, and that's what a joystick gives you.
We actually have a joystick.
And when did Dell go come into business?
Dell?
Yeah.
We don't keep these
Google
in our head.
Yeah.
You'll have to Google those, I'm afraid. We don't really keep those things in our heads.
I just wondered because I got one Dell laptop, and then I have two IBMs, and I have... when Compaq, and I just wondered about Dell when they started coming into business.
They were all, it was all in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, just Google it.
Yeah, they were one of the earliest, but I'm afraid we don't keep that kind of information in our heads.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. We get too many other...
The book that I had, it was for keyboarding, and it was geared for Commodore, it was geared for IBM, Radio Shack, and Apple, and I thought, Apple, right? I didn't realize they went back that far.
Apple came out. Yeah. Apple was the first. They came out in 76. They were the first personal computer,
Well,
the first personal computer.
Wow. Yeah.
The P in PET stood for personal.
Personal, yeah.
The personal electronic transactor.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So I just wanted to give some idea before I go. I got this... computer keyboarding, and if I ever throw that out, it was in Braille, okay, and it's hard to understand keyboard, the Braille, computer Braille, and if you run into people who want to know about it, tell them it's really rough to understand.
I bet it is. All right, thank you so much, John.
Yep, I'll catch you later.
Yep, bye-bye. There's lots of that great stuff still useful today. People who have, for example, who have visual impairments,
yep,
still can use Braille keyboards, and what they call Braille screens, but they're real Braille, the Braille
yeah, they
reader
read lines. To you, basically. Yeah.
Well, they also have a little metal thing with lots of little pins in it, and you can read each line of text as it goes by.
Covert Affairs on USA, their tech guy is the character is blind, and he's got a Braille computer and Braille keyboard that pops up at him while he's working.
Oh, there you go. I do not watch that, but that's good to know. That's good to see. So yeah, there's a lot of that stuff around that still is actually kind of useful, and I'm kind of tickled to think that Commodore and Amiga are back. I haven't seen their stuff, but really the problem today, I suppose it looks like the old one and has all new guts.
Yeah,
yeah. The big problem really these days is that fewer people are buying desktops and laptops, and more people are buying notebooks and tablets and stuff like that.
Yep.
The Chromebook that I'm using, $250, and I can play with it all day. Seven people are viewing. Nobody's in. Everybody left me. They abandoned me. I feel terrible now. All right. Our next caller is Dave from Bergen, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hey guys. I had a question about tax software.
Uh-huh.
For many years, my wife has been using TurboTax on our Mac, but the Mac, it's about 11 years old now. It's an old G4, and I've been using Linux for the last 4.5 years.
Yeah.
And I was wondering what the best way to go would be to use, I guess I could run TurboTax in Wine, or should we do the online version? Because my wife was wondering about the security with the online versions.
Well, the online version actually apparently is pretty good.
You just have to trust that they have access to all your information. They could do whatever they want with it.
But they're going to get access to
if you use a standalone program.
Well, if you use a standalone program and then don't use them as
your conduit,
then it's a different thing, right? Right, right.
Yeah, well, like using the browser version, like in Firefox or whatever.
Yeah, it's
pretty safe, do you think?
It's encrypted from the rest of the internet, so no one can eavesdrop on your conversation, but you are giving into it all of your information.
Right.
You have to, and that's a pretty good trust, but you have to trust that they won't do anything with it.
Right. Okay. So.
But in general, I have seen it work in both Crossover Office and in Wine.
One of the tricks, I'm trying to find it into its website, is if you do the online version, you have to pay for each return you file.
Right.
If you buy the physical disk or you download the standalone program, you can do as many returns as you want for that one price.
Right. Okay.
We had a customer run into that last year. They did the online version and then wanted to do their daughters and their sons, and they wanted Intuit wanted paid again. That's the way it works.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not even sure, because I was surprised when last year the TurboTax for Mac still worked on our computer, even though I think it's using OS 10.4.
Well, you have to buy a new version every year for all the new tax laws.
Right, right. So I'm not even sure if maybe the version for Mac this year would still work on that machine. Even though we don't use the machine, I could dig it out, I guess. Maybe that.
Right, but the problem is it's unlikely to give you a correct answer.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons that you buy new versions every year is that the tax laws change every year.
Oh, right, right. Well, I would buy a new version. Yeah, I'm not even sure if the new version where the Mac would run on our older operating system, the old Mac operating system.
You have to check the specs on it.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're a Linux user, there's also a program called OpenTax Solver.
Oh.
At opentaxsolver.sourceforge.net. I don't use it. Our taxes are so rococo, so completely baroque, that I use a professional who still tears our hair out every year. but it does handle 1040 and forms ABCDLM, AMT worksheets, state income taxes. So if that's good enough for you, check it out at least.
Yeah.
Can't hurt to look at it. OpenTaxSolver.SourceForge.net. Steve will put up a link for that shortly.
Okay.
And And
well, and that's one of the reasons you go to accountants is because they know all the laws, they know all the shortcuts, they know all the deductions.
Yeah.
I always do that with TurboTax. I use their free version and do it myself. Oh, and I get a $200 refund. And then I go to my accountant. Oh, I get a $5,000 refund.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's I personally believe in. I think of myself as a professional and expect that people will use me and pay my fees I'm a professional.
My accountant uses a multi-$1,000 tax program from Intuit, annoyingly, but it's the super high end business version.
But consequently, when I want to do something, I expect to go to a professional and pay for that too.
Support the people that do it better.
That's right. Might as well get it done right rather than just get it done.
Yeah. Well, my wife has had really good luck with using TurboTax because our tax return is not horrendously complicated.
And that's the difference right there is for many people, it's not a terribly difficult thing to do.
For us, it's like an hour where, she's done,
Yeah, for us, it's kind of insane.
Yeah. But I was just debating on whether we should try. Oh, there's another... a Linux program I can't think of that a lot of people have recommended on the internet. I was wondering if we should even just try that.
As opposed to OpenTaxSolver?
As opposed to trying the Mac version on the old machine of TurboTax. As opposed to doing the online thing, which we're still, a little hesitant about.
Yeah, it looks like TurboTax requires at least Windows XP on the PC side, and Snow Leopard on the Mac side.
Yeah.
So it goes back four or 5 years.
Yeah. So we wouldn't be able to use our Mac then for that. Okay.
Oh, your Mac is older than that?
Yeah, it's like 11 years old.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's an old G4.
You should have upgraded that about 10 years ago.
But it still worked last year, which surprised me, with TurboTax, the Mac version. So.
Yeah, the PowerPC processors were discontinued 7 years ago, and virtually all the software now uses the Intel processor.
Yeah. Okay.
All righty.
I'll look into those alternatives.
Perfect. Thanks. That, of course, in general, becomes the problem when you've got an older machine. It's still useful for so many things. Except that one thing you really want to still do.
Yeah.
that's. I always feel bad when somebody says, "But I've got this great blah 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 blah." And what are you going to do? But I'm very excited. The chat seems to be working. There are six people watching us on YouTube. Hello, six people on YouTube. I'm envisioning five people waving back and the sixth person going, "You can't see me. What am I doing?" and then there are the two other people who are actually in the hangout with me, both Joe and Richard. Very nice. Very exciting. I'm very excited about this. I love hangouts. I use them a lot at school with students. Mm-hmm. It's nice because I don't have to go to them. They don't have to come to me if they want to be somewhere else.
But this kind of defeats my purpose when I keep telling folks I have a face for radio.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But you know what?
At least they're only seeing the back of my head.
I think it's low enough resolution that it's not really going to make anybody too terribly sick.
Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Hey, I tell it like it is. You know, what can I say?
Hi to a couple of people in the... in the IRC chat as well. It's we have too many options now. The problem is, you get these larger radio shows that have interns and stuff like that, and they can go in and do stuff and say, "Oh, here's a
question." You only got me.
Yeah, we got you, we got us. That's it. We're it. So while it's nice to have it up, we can't really spend a lot of time on it.
Well, let's put it this way. We couldn't fit another person in the studio.
No, we really couldn't. We could if somebody stood there on the table, that spot right there, they could stand. I'm saying we could fit.
Back there.
Or somebody could stand here if they didn't step on the phone.
Yeah.
So we could really, it depends. Do you mean like humanly usable space or stack them like cordwood? Because we have room for that.
Humanly, I got to be able to see what you guys are. Now, if you folks that are on the camera and see what's going on here, like I said, it's a small studio. I've got four monitors in front of me. I've got the phone systems to deal with and to, you know, still be able to talk to you guys. And to put another person in here in the way?
Yeah. Uh-uh. Yeah, I understand that. I do understand that. But you know what? We're having fun in this show, and that's really the only part that matters to me. I don't really care. What the heck are you
doing? That's an old link left on the website from ages past, from February 2010.
Oh, my golly. Yeah, I'll have to remember to do that. But we have this now. This is very cool, actually. I just have to remember to actually end the broadcast when we're done, as opposed to...
I think that's
they could watch George?
They could watch George. What they would be seeing is the inside of my case, actually. But this is kind of cool.
I think that's what happened to my computer when I opened it up and it was still recording. I think that was from my Wednesday meeting.
Call the boys.
Remember, I started meeting on Wednesday. I forgot to stop the recording then.
All right. I don't know what just happened there, but at some point, wrong button.
Wrong button.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Way too much technology right now. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the truly great... Member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I just realized just now how very dangerous this particular show is.
You think?
As opposed to you two guys, I'm on some great painkillers. And I'm not entirely
and you don't
sure
share.
What I'm going to say next. So,
and you don't share.
And I don't share. But I am seeing colors I haven't seen since the 60s. This is good.
Ooh, that's good, huh?
Stuff. It's good stuff. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is George from Auburn, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Well, based on your current state of health, I expect a real good answer this time.
All righty.
I'm running Firefox. And I was getting into that Java problem they were having. You talked about it on one of your shows.
Yep.
And I wanted to disable it. And I went in, and it said that I had to have version update 10. I think it was 7.10. So I downloaded it, and it gave me the same screen for disabling. It didn't allow me to disable Java. And I wanted, but the other thing I was doing, Java comes in two versions, one for 64-bit, one for 32-bit. So I wanted to see what version of Mozilla I was, Firefox I was running, and I really couldn't tell. And I was wondering if you could advise me on how to look to see what version of Firefox I'm running.
Should be in the help menu under About Firefox.
Yeah. If you go to the help menu and pull down the About. One of the things it should say in there is which version you're running. Let's say Firefox, and it'll just give a number. I won't.
It doesn't say. All it says is 18.
Then you're running Firefox 18.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't say what is the 64-bit or 32-bit.
Oh, that depends entirely on your
your
operating
OS.
System as it is.
The 64-bit OS.
So theoretically, it should have installed the 64-bit Firefox when you installed it.
Okay, so it's automatic. It doesn't necessarily tell you that you're running the 64-bit.
Right.
Internet Explorer does say it, and I went to in the address bar. I typed in about semicolon support, and it came up with a.
Well, here's the thing.
You go to your user agent.
At the moment, and I completely fugued on the fact that you're running Firefox, and I apologize. There are no 64-bit versions of Firefox.
Right. That's right, because I went online, and I typed in 64-bit Firefox, and it looked like it was a work in progress.
Yeah. And there is no 64-bit version of Firefox, so by definition, you are running the 32-bit version of Firefox.
So, in essence, I should have both the 64-bit and the 32-bit version of Java running on my, because I'm running the 64-bit Internet Explorer.
Yep, theoretically you should, yes.
Okay, and in terms of disabling, I don't understand that, because it said that when I went and looked at how to disable Java, it said if I'm running version 7 update 10, when you type, click on a security screen, it's supposed to give you a screen that gives you the option of disabling Java. But when I did it, it didn't even. And I am running the version 7 now. I downloaded that. I'm running the 32-bit version of 7, Java 7.
Right. What you should be able to do is in Firefox, just simply under the Tools menu, click on Add-ons. And that will open the Add-on Manager as a new tab.
Okay. And disable it there.
And one of the and on the left side, you'll see Get Add-ons, Extensions, Appearance, and Plugins. And Java is, in fact, a plugin. So when you click on plugins, you'll see a list of them, all, and each of them will have a disable button.
Okay, yeah, I do see that.
There you go.
And then there should also be a Java control panel. So that disables Java in that one browser. It does not disable Java on your system or your other browsers. So you can disable Java completely by going to the Java control panel.
Well, that's what I tried to do, but it didn't give me that option.
Right, so you do it directly. Where it's important right now, apparently, is on the web specifically. Once you've disabled it there, and do the same for all of your browsers.
But I can't say I can't disable it in the control panel.
Right, but you should be able to disable it. Well, yes, and I agree with that. You would have to uninstall it from the control panel.
Right.
But if you want to keep it and hope for an update, then you go into each of your browsers and disable it there.
But would it give me the same level of security by doing that?
Almost. You could download something that had Java in it and run that.
Now, I'm using NoScript.
That, again, only works on the web. If you were to download something with a JavaScript...
Right, and that only blocks JavaScript. That does not block Java.
Okay.
Which are two completely different and unrelated things, even though they have a similar name.
Engineers, computer programmers and engineers are stupid.
In fact, the guys working on JavaScript actually did rename it to something else, but nobody cares. They still call it JavaScript.
Right.
Right. I run Revo Installer, and I was looking at uninstalling Java. And there's Java, and then right next to it there's another program, JavaFX. And it's version 2.1.1.
Yep, you could uninstall that as well.
What is that?
It's an add-on for Java that does even more things.
Okay, so it's essentially Java.
Yeah, really uninstalling one without installing the other could be a problem. So
okay.
Theoretically, Revo would know that and fix it anyway. But
when I uninstalled Java, it broke Firefox. It just had a blank screen. I had to reinstall Firefox to even get it to work.
Right, because you need to, if you're going to uninstall Java, you need to disable it first in your browsers.
Oh, okay.
Because your browsers are expecting to find it and install it as a plugin.
Okay.
You would think, really, that the browser writers would gracefully degrade that.
Oh, there's no Java. Okay, I'll run without it.
Exactly.
Oh, there's no Java. Ah, and I'll stop.
Exactly. but apparently they didn't, and so there you have it.
Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
Thank you.
Have a good day now.
You too. It's one of the things that is it, and I get it. It's not, programming is not that easy. In fact, I teased something last week that I had planned to announce this week, and I cannot because I spent the week, I had a sinus infection. That was not responding to antibiotics. Turns out the sinus infection was masking an abscessed tooth. So they pulled the tooth, scraped the jaw, couldn't reconstruct things because there's still virus in there. So they gave me a different antibiotic because the first antibiotic wasn't working. Turns out I'm allergic to the second antibiotic. Closed off my air passages. That was exciting.
But this one's better.
Now I'm back on the first antibiotic. And it's doing great. I'm also on massive doses of ibuprofen, among other things, for what happened in my jaw. My entire jaw is outraged at the stuff that was done to it.
Folks think we're kidding when we say we got you Velcroed in.
You know, you ain't kidding. And the interesting thing to me, really, was in the middle of the extraction,
Mm-hmm.
You know, when there's like four people standing on the chair arms reaching in to try to pull this tooth out.
And they take a lunch break.
Well, no, I thought to myself, and in the 1880s, Doc Holliday did this with nothing but whiskey. They were tough sons of guns back then. I'm telling you, they were tough back then.
I wouldn't even want... Why did your mind go that way?
Because it wasn't my mind at that point. All right? I was just okay. A passenger.
Better living through synthetic chemicals.
It was going where it was going, and I was along for the ride. This is why I've always told people I don't do drugs. It's scary enough being in this head. I don't want to be in this head without being in control.
Well, that's why I've said to this friend of mine, I says, there's a party going on in my head. I just haven't been invited yet.
Yes, indeed. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to John from Rush, New York. Either that or it's John who's one of the musicians in Rush. Which is it?
John from Rush.
Oh, not as exciting, but not bad. So what can we do for you, John?
I just bought a new computer that runs Windows 7. Thank you, Mr. Enright. Bought it through your shop.
There you go.
Woohoo! Enright and Dairy PC.
When I tried to get on my router at home, it's an old MIMO G+. From Belkin, it just won't run it. It won't communicate with it. And I think it's just the firmware isn't compatible with Windows 7. But before I take my new router that I just bought and open it up and void the return policy, is that the probable cause?
If the router is not doing A, B, G, or N, and is in fact doing only MIMO, then yes, that is the problem. It's not going to communicate because...
It's so old.
Right. Now, but let's step back just a moment. The Windows 7 machine you've got, is it a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
Does it even have a wireless connector in it?
It does not, but when I plug in the USB, whatever the heck it is... it doesn't even see it. Doesn't
because you can't use USB. You have to use Ethernet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you? Okay. When you bought this, did you buy? And does it have an Ethernet card in it?
Comes on the motherboard.
It should come on the motherboard.
Yeah, it's on the motherboard.
So it's an Ethernet cable between the computer and your router.
So all you need is the right Ethernet cable. They're blue, they're yellow, they're red, they're green. It's very
It looks like an oversized phone jack. It's got eight wires on it.
Yeah, I know. I would need about a 30-foot cable, though, to get to where I have my router. So,
or then you add a wireless card to the computer.
Or he might be using like a... Netgear wireless little adapter with the little antenna on it that you plug into a USB port.
There are USB wireless adapters. Is that what you're using?
Well, let's see. Now I can't honestly tell you. With the Belkin system I had on my old computer, it was just a unit that I plugged into the USB port.
And
the
USB
was a wireless adapter.
Yes.
Right. So you need to update drivers for that device for Windows 7, which Belkin may not make.
They don't.
So then you have to replace the USB wireless or get an internal wireless card for the computer.
Okay. Or buy a different dongle.
Or buy a new USB wireless adapter. Or buy a really long Ethernet cable.
Okay. Yeah, right. Now, the next question is, I'm probably going to update it anyway, the router and the adapter only because I need a little more range anyway. But the next question then is, if I have two routers on my same cable modem, is that going to cause me any problems?
Yes, you should not have two routers. You should have only one router. Yeah,
you can have two routers if they are set up correctly.
Yeah, one's got to be a gateway.
Right, if one of them is essentially cloned to the other.
Okay, yep.
But setting that up is not something we can go through over the air.
Sure.
And it also depends on what routers you have. You may not be able to do that with just any old router you happen to have.
Yeah, it was just a question more than something I was planning on doing.
Yeah, usually you just replace your old router with a new router. It'll have N. It will be much greater range. You might even spring...
more speed, too.
Well, you might even spring for an AC router. Those are the new ones coming that'll support gigabit wireless, but no one else supports that yet. But you'll be ahead of the curve.
The other thing, The other thing you can do is a booster. They yep. sell devices that essentially take the wireless signal and boost it. So, for example, I have one when we want to sit in the backyard around the pond. I turn that on. Our signal goes blasting out through the backyard, probably sizzling electronics.
Halfway up the hill.
Yeah, in our neighbor's house. But I tend to turn it off when we're not using it. But that lets us extend the range farther in one direction than we normally would.
Yeah, but yep. if he's got an older router...
Well, but that's just, yeah. It's part of it. If you don't, you know, you need a specific type of router and then the same extender from that same company that matches mm-hmm. that router, yada, yep. yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
Yeah, it sounds like it's time to upgrade anyway. It does. I got 12 years out of the old one. I suppose yep. that's
not. It owes you nothing. Yeah. You're in good shape with that
Go
one.
For it.
Okay, guys, thank you very much. I yep. really enjoy your show.
Thanks, John. Yeah.
But we're starting to see a lot of people getting, instead of just a network router, getting a WAN router and replacing your Time Warner router or your Frontier router because they're charging you rent now. I think Frontier always has, but now Time Warner started charging $4 a month for you to rent their router. And for novice users, that's probably something you want to do because then when there's a problem, you can call the company up and they'll help you fix it. But a lot of people are buying their own router to save that rental fee. And then you can troubleshoot it yourself, which is the downside of that.
Right. All right. Yeah. And that's an interesting question that's different in every case. I mean, we get calls like that. Should I buy or should I rent? Right. Well,
see, a lot of folks, excuse me, I'm telling them more or less to rent it. That way, you know, if they go ahead and pay the rent, and if something happens, especially a power right. surge or anything else, all they do is call the company up and say, hey, broke, fix, replace, boom. Otherwise, unless you're, you know, not good at setting things up, then yeah, go ahead, be adventurous, go out, get the product, set it up yourself, configure the wireless any way you want with a good secure password and everything else, and do your own thing.
And you know what? Don't get me started on internet service providers.
Oh.
Because I will start. You don't want me to go there. You do not want me to go there. Oh, we don't have enough time.
Oh, go ahead. Tell you what, I'll give you...
We don't have time.
6 seconds.
No. We don't have... I can't say anything polite in 6 seconds about internet service providers. So we're instead going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. We have our friend Bodan on the line when we come back. A whole lot more of, or at least some more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites, and we're right here on the truly great, and thanks to you, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Bodan from Rochester, New York, on the line. Welcome, Bodan. What's up?
Happy New Year to you, gentlemen.
Happy New Year to you, too. Was Santa good to you?
Yeah, overall he was, yes. I bought myself another pass for the Jazz Festival at the end of June. That's always a great time in the city of Rochester.
21st to the 29th. Already got my days booked, and I'm going to be down there.
I've got my vacation days, and I'll be working around the house in the daytime and supporting the local economy in the evening.
Yes.
That's what we like to hear.
Hey, gentlemen, 2013 is starting out with a year of good and bad news. The last time I spoke to you, gentlemen, which I believe was the Saturday after Christmas, I informed you that I had a number of video clips that I had transferred from my digital camera onto my computer, and that all of a sudden the video would play using Windows Media Player, but I heard nothing, zero. And it was like I lost the audio codecs. So you gentlemen recommended I download, and I did, the VLC program, which played is fine. Well, I had to rip a CD last weekend, and I had Windows Media Player open for that for, you know, copying some music onto my hard drive. And I said, let me just see if, you know, what happens if I play a video clip during Windows Media Player. And it was like a present I didn't even ask for. All of a sudden, it played properly. I had no idea. I didn't do anything. All of a sudden, it plays using Windows Media Player, audio and video. I have no idea what happened. But on the other hand,
sometimes things that break themselves will fix themselves.
It's like, whatever. Now, here's the other issue. I'm still having an issue updating, installing two security updates for Microsoft. And one occurred back in November, and I basically got so frustrated with it that one of the when I went online to read up some of the support topics on it, it's KB26980231. One of the options it said was turn off your antivirus program and start for the install. That didn't work. I got so frustrated, I tried a clean boot. Well, I did a clean boot and put my computer into cardiac arrest. It took me almost a half a day to get it back to normal operation. So I'm afraid to go down that road again. This past week, there was another update from Microsoft Windows, and one of the updates cannot install. There is a common thread. It's a security update for Microsoft.NET Framework 1.1 on SP whatever. I have two of them now that will not install. One of the options is a clean boot. I'm afraid to do it. The other one is another option that says to completely go into your control panel and remove the Microsoft.NET Framework client profile and reinstall the whole kit and caboodle. I'm a little, you know, afraid to do that only because I did the clean boot last time, it took me 4 hours to get my computer back to where it was before.
Go to your temp directory.
Temp directory.
Open up the installation log for that patch.
Uh-huh.
It'll be called NDP1.1 SP1 dash and then the KB number blah 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 dot MSI something dot log. You'll see it. I mean, it's just one of the log files, and embedded in the name is the KB2698023. If you have in there, search that installation log for error 1606, could not access network location.
1606?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you find that, then what you need is Microsoft Fix It 50356.
I did download that Fix-It thing, and it comes up clean. It doesn't do anything.
Well, there's a bunch of different Fix-Its for each different problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you need 50356, definitely.
50356?
Right.
Okay. And run that, then?
Theoretically fixes that particular problem.
Yeah, there's a common thread that it's error number 0x643. When I click on the description why it won't install, both of them have error 0x643.
Yeah.
Now, the other option is taking it to a reputable computer stores, like there's one on Empire Boulevard, and saying, guys, can you correct this problem?
Yep.
On the other hand, for now, what I've done was I just unchecked those two updates and said, don't remind me again. My computer seems to run fine. I'm doing everything I want to do other than the fact that these two Microsoft updates won't install.
Yeah, if you don't go to a lot of Microsoft websites, you don't really need a lot of framework update. But also check out KB922-377. Yeah, check that one as well.
Okay.
Or otherwise, you can take it where?
Well, take it to a reputable computer place, like there's the one on Empire Boulevard, and have them.
And their name is?
On the other hand, here's the thing. My machine
I can't say it, so he's gotta.
My machine is 5 years old. Is it worth investing any more money, or realistically, it's a five-year-old machine, you know, it's in the eighth inning of the ball game, or do I just say, you know what, just run it until the wheels fall off the car and you'll have to buy another machine in the next 12 months?
Well, you know what? What do you do that actually requires a computer as opposed to a web browser?
You know what? That's a good question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the reason is I'm kind of hepped up on these Chromebooks right now.
You are?
Yeah, I really am. I love mine. I'm on it right now with the...
But I'm still old-fashioned. I want to sit and look at monitors instead of holding a laptop.
I agree with that. My eyes are old. I'm not, but my eyes certainly are. And there are times when I like sitting in front of that big monitor. But yeah, okay, I get that. But other than that, you know, you might well think about getting a Chrome box.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, how important are these updates? Currently, I just unchecked them and said, don't remind me about these two updates. To what exactly is NET? You know,
the .NET framework is a set of programming languages. C++, C#, a bunch of different languages, all using the Microsoft .NET framework to do things. And so if you need a... some programs require it, many don't. So unless you're using a program that requires it, you're not even going to miss it when it's gone. Listen, we got to run because I got at least, I got to see if I can get in one more call. Thanks. Yeah, but I don't do a lot with, most people don't use much, of .NET anyway, so it doesn't really matter all that much. For most people, it really doesn't. I can't look now.
I know. While he's answering the phone, I just found a little comic on my Google Plus. You know, you get those program not responding errors, so you just start clicking the mouse more and more and more and more and harder and harder and harder and harder and harder, and then a message pops up: issue resolved. 317 clicks has corrected the error.
Yeah. Our next caller is Jack from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
I didn't hear the start of the program. Sounds
what?
So something is. There's a problem with Java that people ought to be disabling or something.
Yes, everybody should be disabling
before
Java.
Before you go off the air, could you just give a summary of advice there?
Yeah, what's happened is they've discovered that there's a vulnerability in Java that would let anybody on the internet take complete control of your machine.
Ooh.
Not a big problem. So everybody should disable Java in their browsers.
How?
We've put up a link for every single web browser, common web browser in use today. Mm. And it's on our website at soundbites.org, and you can click on the links button and get to it that way.
But basically, you go into your browser's preferences, and there's a box that you uncheck.
Yeah, that's basically it for all of them. But
it's safe to go on and go to your site. But
yes, don't go anywhere else. Just go to our site and pull that down. And in fact, it may be that after you do that, those two little sidebars that show up the tweets and the Facebook, I don't remember if those are Java or not. I'll have to go back and look. They might be JavaScript, which will not be affected by this. But yeah, I would definitely disable Java completely until they fix it.
Soundbites.org.
You got it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, that's an interesting issue. It sounds so simple, a little vulnerability. What that little vulnerability lets anybody do is completely control your machine. And it's out in the wild already, so, yeah, let's be very careful of that. Our next caller, Joe, from Fairport, New York. Hiya, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Nick, it's Joe Eckstein. I wanted to call and tell you that after urging you to try out the Roku box about a year and a half ago, I'm finally getting one myself.
How do you like it?
And so the other thing is, it's more advice than anything. For your sinus dealy, non-sinus dealy,
yeah.
I would have a lot of garlic. Garlic's a good antiviral, anti-infection thingy.
I'm an Italian. Garlic is an aphrodisiac for me. It's not a problem. Believe me. Believe me when I tell you, garlic is not a problem for me.
Good deal.
Thanks,
right.
Joe.
Well, that was it, pretty much.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
All right, so we've got just a minute or two left. I'll go on a little mini rant. And I want to talk about the state of internet service providers in America. We have almost no choice here in the United States. We've become a third world country when it comes to internet service providers. We are 18th in the world. In Japan, when you want to bundle your television and your phone and your internet access, you get gigabit access. They come to you the very next day because there's so much competition, and it costs you for all of that $30 a month. The same thing is true in Korea. South Korea, for God's sake, you can get internet access at $30 a month. People in their subway tunnels are all watching full motion video on their phones because they've got high speed data access, and we do not. people don't pay on both ends of a phone call. When you make a call, you pay. When they receive the call, they pay. And they don't do that in other countries. We are far behind, and it's time for our elected representatives to look at the problem and see how we can become that first world country again when it comes to internet access. It's a reprehensible state of affairs, and we should be ashamed. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. It's all 13 people who called in. For all those who did not call in, I don't know why you didn't. We had way too much fun today, and for if there was anybody to whom we did not get, I want to apologize to them as well. We're waving to the cameras now as we're done. Thanks, everybody, on the Google Hangout and the YouTube thing. That'll be up on YouTube in my area, Nick Francesco. Really hard name to remember. You could go back and watch the YouTube later if that's your idea of a good time. And we'll be back here next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and thanks to you, we are on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week. Stay out of trouble, will you?